conversations happening right okay, there, Yana, right now.
We gotta break in because we gotta run. But we've been speaking with Yana Maximova. Thank you so much, Yana, on the line live from Lima, Peru, at the UN Climate Talks. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, and we got to wrap up this special presentation of Political Perspectives here on KBO Community Radio. My name is Paul Rowan. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
In Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, December 10th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest, we're going to try to get Cordelia Finley with Forest Defense, Cascade Forest Defense, back to report on the outcome of yesterday's event, as it were, in Salem, the Elliott State Forest. One is being apparently repurposed and sold. We are given to understand not 100% for logging. What we've heard thus far is not encouraging. It would appear on the surface that parts of the forest will be set aside for people to hunt and camp and so forth. That's not good news. The entire forest needs to be preserved. Everyone knows that. But the pressure from the timber companies on the states, the fact, too, that rural schools still haven't been able to figure out a way to finance their own operations. After 100 years, all they could figure out is timber. That's it, cutting down trees. They have no other ideas beyond that. Nobody has looked into alternative ways of financing their school system. Not a twinkling, not nothing. It's only timber. If they can't cut down trees, they're going to cut down the schools. End of story. It's amazing that people can be so ignorant. This is the only word to describe it. Moving right along, today is a very interesting day because the entire world, especially the United States, is focused on the revelations, the torture. I personally believe that there's a great deal more that has not been made public. I think we need to continue the pressure to make that information public. We're going to be relying more and more, I think, on people like Edward Snowden. I expect that more people, more whistleblowers, are going to come forward now with the revelation of this torture release. That we will now see people who, as conscience, has somehow made life impossible for them, and now they are going to come forward, and we're going to find out what the real story was. When you have a situation where the likes of John McCain have said this is what we did was not productive and in fact was destructive of America's image abroad and all around the world. Returning back to Cascadia, because we need to talk to Jody McCaffrey today, the Citizens Against LNG, there is a little bit more attention being paid to the problem that is besetting activists down in Coos Bay, the Jordan Cove terminal. is still in play. And Jody is joining us right now to bring us up to speed on that situation. Good morning, Jody. Thanks so much for returning to the KBOO airwaves.
Yes, thank you for having me and bringing to your listeners the facts of what's going on down here.
Yeah, it's the Sierra Club. Ted Gleichman was down your way. He's been going to the meetings, I understand, and environmental groups, though, don't seem to be. Tell us a little bit about how your interaction right now with environmental groups and the role that they seem to be playing in defending Coos Bay from the energy export-import industry.
Well, I don't really know what all they do. We don't see them doing much. We're like in the thick of it in, say, Coos County and Douglas County. We have a lot of land use permits that are still up in the air. We have 4 appeals currently underway. Citizens have done those. They're not really being done by environmental groups. We also have, you know, all these hearings and processes that they've had going on in our, particularly in Coos County, where the terminal's at. You know, mainly that's citizens that are going to those meetings and filing comments and stuff. And we, you know, at this point, FERC is actually having meetings this week. On Monday, there was one here in Coos Bay. Last night was one in Roseburg. Tonight is one in Canyonville at the Seven Feathers Casino there. And the Thursday is in Medford at the high school there. And then Friday, the FERC will be in Klamath Falls. And we need people going to these meetings, supporting the local grassroots effort that's trying to hold their own against this gas and oil industry company that's come in here, a foreign Canadian company. What FERC is actually having comments on is the draft environmental impact statement.
That's what I want to ask you about. What is in it? I understand from you and others who testified against the EIS and the project that this draft EIS is no better and in many ways worse than the import. This is very interesting because I think it appears that the corporations involved didn't seem to think there was a difference in an EIS for import and an EIS for export, that they assumed that the initial findings were sufficient and that they were going to simply go ahead based on that. That's incredible that the lack of oversight at every stage of the project is just, it's incredible. So why the draft EIS is no better in some ways, worse, why is that?
Well, what I found is the original import terminal, which was released in 2008, and we had comments that were due in December of 2008. Basically, a lot of the comments that we made on that original draft for EIS for the import terminal, we're going to have to make them all over again because they have the same mistakes, the same flawed data they've used from Jordan Cove that we pointed out was wrong. So basically, it's like we've been commenting for 10 years and nobody's been listening to us. So our the Citizens Against LNG is a group that I'm the executive director of, and our president, Katie Iman, basically told FERC on Monday that if they didn't redo this EIS and do it properly, that they can expect us to challenge it if they make a decision based on a flawed EIS like this. And you have to understand, the EIS is supposed to be a non-decisional document. It's supposed to be an analysis of all the alternatives. Well, basically what this EIS is just a justification for Jordan Cove. They didn't really look at alternatives of any sort. And we need to really be pointing that out, that there's better alternatives to exporting our fracked gas that we shouldn't even be fracking to foreign countries.
And it seems now, too, that gas prices are beginning to tank, no pun intended. And this, in world markets right now are staggering. People beginning to, in London, the energy traders are beginning to acknowledge that the entire architecture is terrifyingly unstable. Saudi Arabia, as well, has altered their output. and based again on America's adventures in shale and fracking in up in the Dakotas. So moving forward, can you, before we let you go, just let listeners know what steps to take right now to preserve and protect our coastal waters.
Well, they can attend these meetings, but also, in addition to this, the comment period is open until February 13th. So written comments are very valuable. We need detailed written comments, people going and looking at this draft EIS and putting substantial comments in on it so that, you know, in the end, someone can use those to defend the issues with the environment and the things that FERC did not even address. Cover it adequately.
So that's February 13th is the deadline, everybody. We've been speaking with Jody McCaffrey, who's back returning, being very generous with her time. Thanks so much for that, Jody. And we will keep everyone posted on this. It's preserving and protecting our coastal waters right now is of enormous importance. We cannot stress how important it is to stop this. If this terminal happens, it opens the floodgates for many more up and down the coast. This will serve as a precedent. We can kiss off every living thing on the West Coast. These tankers are huge. It's a very dangerous coast. The mouth of the Columbia River is the most dangerous water on the planet. Now, think about it. That's all we're asking. Returning to Portland, it's the Portland City Council, the agenda I'm looking here for the soon to be up again for consideration is Portland's relationship, as it were, with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Before we get into that, though, I want to welcome Arslan Bukhari. He's the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations for Washington State, and a warm welcome to you. Thanks so much for being with us today, Arslan. There's been an incident that is really troubling in Seattle. Taxi driver was assaulted. It was clearly a case of anti-Muslim violence. Can you tell us why is this common in Seattle, and why is this very, very important that we look long and hard at this? This is a mirror of who we are as a people right now.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me this morning. You know, to answer your question about whether this is common, our numbers are based on just the reporting. So when people report cases to us is when we can comment. And reporting of anti-Muslim hate crimes has been very, very high this year. In fact, one of the comments I made yesterday is that it seems like we're hearing news of high-profile anti-Muslim hate crimes happening nationwide almost every day. I mean, just this past Thursday, a young 15-year-old boy was killed by a guy who just really hated Muslims and ran him over on purpose. And then we heard about this. We heard about graffiti in California. So almost every single day we're hearing about these events. So they're getting more common. And these are reported events. We also now wonder what else is going on where the victims just don't know where to turn.
How do you account for the rise in hate crimes? Looking around, why is
this
happening?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint just one item that's causing them. But there are a lot of things that are causing us a lot of concern. We're seeing an increase in anti-Muslim rhetoric. We're seeing, you know, mainstream leaders, political leaders, and others, you know, calling Islam just the worst things and Muslims just the worst things. And somehow, you know, basically repeating anti-Semitic, you know, insults that were used many years ago and now recycling them and using them against Muslims. And that sort of conversation from leaders in politics and, you know, religious leaders does cause people to take action against people that they think are Muslims or who are in fact Muslims. We just heard, you know, for example, a political leader in Minnesota who called, you know, Muslims a parasite or parasites. I mean, it's just, you know, that sort of dehumanization that from leadership that causes people to think of our community members who are upstanding citizens as somehow people to be afraid of.
It's as non-Muslim Americans. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest? What steps should we take? Sure. All of us bear responsibility for these actions. We as a people does not speak well of our culture or American society. Before we let you go, if you could just wrap it up with advice, as it were.
I think the best thing to do is, as we mentioned, the root cause of this seems to be just a mainstream promotion of bigotry and falsehoods and stereotypes. So whenever someone says something that you think is just really bigoted or really not based on real facts, question them. I think the best thing people can do is stand up against hate promotion and ask the person, where did you get this information? And really condemn that sort of bigotry. That's the best thing you can do, because when we see people saying really bad things, we don't hear a lot of people standing up and saying, no, that's not what America stands for. So that's the best thing you can do. When you hear about hate crimes, when you hear about bigotry, contact your local Muslim community and make a public statement. When you hear things happening in mainstream media, write a letter to the editor or to the management and ask them to be more provide fact-based coverage, fact-based commentary, and not speculation.
Just bring these things to light. Thank you so much for that, Arslan. My guest has been Arslan Bukhari. He is the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations for the State of Washington. And more on that later, more on the revelations of the CIA torture programs. And don't forget that the NDAA was passed yet again. On December 4th, the House passed the National Defense Authorization Act. It includes a provision to transfer, get this, 2,400 acres of Apache and ancestral and ceremonial lands to a foreign mining company. This has been Air Cascadia for December 10th, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson's a KBOOM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.